Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, Power to Be You listeners and the Rise to Win for Our Youth movement on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Sandra Bueno, and I am coming to you live from West Palm Beach. Our half an hour show today is being dedicated to the leaders and the community organizations who are making a stand and who are taking a stand to be part of change and part of a solution, not just people who are talking about it, but people who are walking the walk. And all of you know that my purpose with Rise to Win for Our Youth movement is to alineate those people who are making a difference so that together we can all stand as one, wanting to bring empowerment, to bring education and solutions to the situations we are facing today with our youth. And today's guest is a very special lady, a very special woman, and a very special soul who has really created an organization to really make a difference. And how I would like to begin the show is to read to you an excerpt from the actual outline of this organization. The organization is called Charles Edward Tyson Jr. Outreach Foundation, and this organization was created in April of 2008 in response to an event and a tragedy that took place almost 2 years back. And I will read to you this introduction. CJ, as he was affectionately called, was a happy and beautiful infant. He was just learning to walk. He had a joyful smile and healthy curiosity like all babies under the loving and watchful eye of his mother. He was just 9 months old when his life was violently taken from him, sadly at the hands of someone he should have been able to trust. And this is the purpose for this foundation. I will now introduce to you Ms. Joanne Mosley, who is the founder of this organization located in Delray Beach, Florida. Joanne, are you on the line?
Yes.
Good afternoon, and welcome on Power to Be You and Rise to Win for Our Youth.
How are you doing? Thanks.
Oh, I'm doing well, and thank you. I know that, you know, this is bittersweet because of this tragedy that has taken place with your grandchild. And when we spoke yesterday, you began to tell me more about the outreach that you're doing and the purpose for your organization. And I also understand and, you know, I mean, just respect and offer my condolences, because it's through tragedy that many people will rise up and step up to making a difference. And the fact that you're making a difference and that you have initiated this organization says a lot about your ability to make something, turn something bad into something good. But it doesn't take away from the pain. So I want you to know that I believe that this is something that is, you know, a human triumph, and I commend you for that. I honor you for that.
Thank you.
Well, let's begin. Let's start, because I really want to use this show so that we can bring and raise awareness for your organization, the what your program is, and why you began it. Why? Let's start with that. Why did you begin this foundation?
Well, I began it because in April 2006, my grandson, my old Charles Tyson, was murdered by his father, Charles Edward Tyson Sr. It was hardship because in the process, I was trying to get help for the young man that killed my grandson. I noticed that he had some mental issues and anger problems, and I went through all kind of authorities trying to get some help with him 6 months before this happened. And my point with that is that when you go to children and families or people to tell them that stuff happening and they can't come out right away, and by the time they get out, you know, the stuff is over. And I have a problem with them, because when you stay with a person or you see a person every day and you go to them with something, you know, more than one time saying this is going on, they need to take the time and improve the organization to listen. And if they listen to some of the people that's involved in some of these situations, a lot of this stuff wouldn't happen. And that was the case with me. I tried to get them to understand that this guy has an anger problem, real bad anger problem, and he didn't need to have the baby. And because he was the father, he had more rights than I had. And what that's basically how I started.
And what about the role with your daughter? How did that take place?
Well, my daughter, you know, you try to watch them. As always, I took her to places that dances and stuff, and I picked up. But like I said, if a person want to do something, they're going to find a way to do it. That's even with them, with us when we was coming up. And my daughter started seeing this guy when she was about 14. I went to them about when I found a letter that she had wrote to him. His mother actually found it and brought it to me, and I called the police and told them about, you know, she was 14 years old, and at that time he was 18, because they said that, well, she didn't say he was forced on or whatever. It didn't, you know, they wouldn't do anything about it. My point to them was she was a minor. Also, she have mental issues. She have, you know, epilepsy. She don't understand a lot of things. All this was brought to their attention, but didn't nobody do anything. And if somebody had stepped in right then when I told them, you know, this guy is over age sleeping with my daughter, we never probably wouldn't even got for us having the baby.
Well, see, a lot of this, you know, what you're coming to saying, it's really so evident right now. It's a lot of, I think, organizations try to help after the cause rather than going down to the root. You know, helping really, like you say, you know, with intervention and even prevention. You know, why intervene when you can actually come and prevent? And like
right.
you said, your daughter was 14 years of age, and, you know, this is precisely what needs to take place. And for me, you know, bringing you on this show is because you have the experience. You have a direct, you know, experience with this type of situation where your knowledge speaks louder than anyone who has taken a class about this or who takes a book and reads on it and says, okay, how am I going to apply this to a real-life scenario?
Yes. And you know? my problem with I don't judge people, you know, with their education and what they learn, but the majority of the time when you hear people with, you know, PhDs and higher up in class, the majority of them don't have kids or haven't been through it, and they basically, you know, judge on what they read. Some of them use, you know, the statistics, but when you got hand-on experience, it's a lot better to pick up, you know, danger. And in my case,
yeah.
I picked up danger. But my point was, you know, the way the system got, mothers and fathers have more rights than grandmothers. No matter what you say to them, if they don't see it in action at that point, it's no use to taking it to them because they don't believe you anyway. And, you know, and after he's dead, it's no need of, you know, saying anything because it's over.
My grandson,
you know, I'm not saying that the Lord wouldn't have took him, but we wouldn't know. But if they had took my advice and looked into what I was telling them and not waiting 2 or 3 days and coming out and say, okay, now this ain't happened, or I don't see this. I mean, because in one situation, he was pulling on the baby right in front of the police, and they still let him walk off with the baby because he was the father.
And now what happened the day when the actual situation happened?
Okay, we had went to see my son. He's in federal prison up in he was in Coleman at that time. And the baby was having a stomach problem, and I told my daughter to take him to the emergency room to Boca West Hospital. Well, she went and got him because he was the father, and he went with it. And don't get me wrong, anything dealing with the baby, when the baby was born, he was there. And that's why it was so hard to believe that he killed him because, you know, the baby had, they had broke his arm when he was born. And he had real bad jaundice. And, you know, they tried to make him leave. I mean, he was sleeping on the floor because he wasn't going to leave the baby there. He didn't allow certain people to touch the baby. And, he just did everything concerning the baby. But my main point, when the baby was born, he didn't want his mother around the baby. And that was strange to me because usually when a guy have a baby, you know, the mother be the first one they want there. But it was just so many things, signs that he was sending out that let me know that something was wrong. And when they was coming back, my daughter was tired of him, you know, accusing her of all different kind of things because he was so weak in his mind that he believed stuff that people were saying to him. He didn't have to actually see it, but if somebody came up and said, my daughter did this, he believed it. So they were constantly arguing, you know. So my daughter was tired, and she told him she was tired. She didn't want to be with him. And he hung the baby out the window, and the first time he did it, she stopped and asked him to please put the baby back in the car. Okay, and so he did that. But then they was coming off Congress, and they turned down 10th and turned on 17. When they got down 17, then he threw the baby out the window. My daughter stopped the car, and she said she went to fighting him, and then she jumped out the car to go back to pick the baby up. By the time she got back there, he got back there too, and he tussled with her. And one thing, my daughter with epilepsy, she takes medication, and if she don't take it, her level drop, then it makes her weak. And that night, because she take it in the morning, she take it at night, she hadn't took her medication, so she couldn't really fight him. And so he got the baby by the hand, he walked back to the car, had the baby by the feet, and he hit the baby face on the hood, you know, face down. When he hit him, the baby fell off the car. My daughter got him. She said, you know, his neck was kind of twisted, so she was buckling him in the car to take him back to the hospital. Before she could get around to the other side, he jumped in the car. And she said she was trying to hold on, but she couldn't because, you know, when you drive the car and you turn a curve and you hold on the door, you can't hardly hold on to that. So she turned it loose. He drove over to the lake, which is about a half a mile, and he threw the baby in the lake. He came back and got her and told her, you need to go and get your baby before the gators get him. And that's when she started hollering and crying, and people heard her. But the people were saying they thought she had did it, but they thought, you know, a lot of things they thought because she was screaming and saying, my baby, but they didn't understand that the baby was in the water.
Wow. And when the police came, was the baby alive still or was the baby dead?
No, the first officer that came, I can't remember his name, but a guy in one of the apartments came out with a big old light, and when he put the light on the water, the officer seen the baby. He just jumped in there and got him, you know. And that was one of the reasons, you know, we was trying to do appreciation of him because at the time it happened, we wasn't of us in a state of mind to do anything, but I just wanted him to know that we appreciate him jumping in there, getting him, even though he was dead. We appreciated him jumping in the water, taking him out. But he didn't wait for the paramedic. He just jumped in there and got him.
What time was this, during the day or at night?
No, this was early in the morning, about 2:30 in the morning.
Okay, and that's, you know, this is such a story that really, really moves you, and I can only tell you that because of this, of the possibility of us recording this, this is something that I feel can also be used to really make young people aware, especially the people right now, you know, kids who are 14, 15, 17, having relationships where there's so many emotions there in addition to so many other issues where they don't realize the seriousness of what, you know, and how one thing can lead to another. And so I will tell you that I do appreciate you for having the courage and being able to even share this story with us. And it moves you. It, you know, I can never speak how intense this is, but I know that you're making a difference by creating this organization. I actually found out about your organization a few weeks ago when I was driving, and there were a group of people who were running a fundraiser, and exchange for any amount that you could donate, they were able to give me your Outreach Foundation pamphlet. And, you know, and that was great because I was able, and you might even know, the only change that I had, actually the only money that I had at that point, was a Ziploc bag full of change. And I remember saying, I was embarrassed, and I said, oh, I only have these coins in here. And then I said, you know what, this is all I have, and this is the best that I can give right now. And it's really, I think it's very strange that this is a way that we've come together, because my purpose with Rise to Win, excuse me, is to bring people like yourself and organizations like yourself who are grassroots organizations, who have the heart, who have the spirit, who are willing to go in there and do what it takes because you have hands-on and you know more than anybody else what you can say and what you can do to bring some form of change. So together with the personal development, together with bringing people who have resources, I do feel that we can start in, you know, making a change here in this community. And once we do that, the program can be used across the nation because truly our youth need us to step in. And those youth who are, no matter where they are in their level of growth or in their level of competence, they all deserve a chance. And I do believe that equipped with the love and with the knowledge and with the insight, they can come around and they can really step up to moving in a different direction. Mm-hmm. So if you can tell us now about your programs or what is it that you are looking to accomplish with your organization?
Well, what I was looking to accomplish, my first goal was to help teenagers between kids that between the ages of 8 to 17, that's, you know, because most organizations tell them, like on TV, I hear them say a lot of time, you know, if you got a baby, don't kill him, drop him off here, and as far as it goes, we have to learn that they have to be taught, you know, so they won't just go get babies and drop them off, educate them and saying, you know, this is what you shouldn't do to do this, but if you do, these are the circumstances that behind them, because the kids end up paying a high price for our mistake. And my point was, because I have been, you know, dealing with the jails and going to them, and I found out that the kids are very angry at their parents that's in prison. They are very angry, and I felt like they need to have a face-to-face conversation, and the kids need to say, you know, Mama or Daddy, I am mad at you. You left me out here in this world, and you know most of the time when people leave their kids, or the man with the woman with the man, and they be with somebody else, most of the time the child, if it ain't sexual, verbal, physical abuse, and it's hard to find a man. I mean, it's some men that will, but it's hard to find men that will actually take care of other people's kids, you know, just like they will. But we do have some men, but it is, my point with the kids is I wanted them to, you know, go to the prisons and face off with their parents and let their parents know just how they feel. Let them be able to be angry and say exactly what they feel to them. And then the parents turn around and tell them, you know, this is why this happened. It was my foolishness that got me. It had nothing to do with you. I'm sorry. And, you know, they work on it, and they'll start to bond. And the child wouldn't be angry, because I found out, you know, with my grandson, because like I told you, my son is in prison. No matter what I said to them, until they heard their father tell them what happened and why he's there, that's when they start to bond with him, because they didn't want to have nothing to do with them. They felt like they was just left out here. You know, their mama was gone. They was left out here. You didn't care enough for me to, you know, come in out the world. And most of these guys, like I was reading, they either get in trouble because they high or they drinking, they on drugs. I was reading, according to the Bureau of Justice stipulation in 07, we have 744,000 guys in state and federal prison. And in the United States, a father, they have 1,599,200 children under the age of 18.
Wow. From that's actual
a lot of
men?
Kids. Yes.
Almost
yes.
Doubled. Wow. Okay.
And just think about it. That many kids out here walking around don't know what to do. Because the mother could only teach them so much, the grandmama could teach them, but most time a boy need a father figure, or a girl need a mother figure. And a lot of time you can't get that, because like I said, the experience with my grandkids, you know, their mother's not here, their dad is locked up, and like I told my son, it was half of your responsibility, and even though I'm raising them for you, I'm not giving them what they need, you know, for their mother and their father. And like I said, once they start facing off with him, they start to bonding, and they start to realize that it wasn't their fault. It was something that he did. And then he gets to call them, and they gets to talk, and then I take them up there, and they get to see him. But our program is, you know, we go to the jail, and the guys that was telling us that they hadn't seen their kids, we send the paperwork out to them, and then we send it to who they say got the kids. And if that person agrees that they want them to see the kid, then we try to fund the trip for them to go see the kids. But if that person don't, then, you know, we can't do the bonding because they don't want, you know, involvement. And the reason I say sometimes that's fine, but sometimes it's dangerous, because my mother kept my father from me because she thought she was doing the right thing. But it wasn't the right thing for me. It caused me to be angry and upset and didn't like my father because I thought my father didn't want me, and that wasn't the case. And I know a lot of parents try to do what's best for their kids, but a lot of time when you keep the other party out of their life, all the time it's not the best thing for a kid. And they grow up with anger and hate, and a lot of time they won't tell you. They'll just do something stupid to get put away or locked away or, you know, because they're angry.
Would you say, would you think, or would you say that in your experience what you've noticed is a child, even if his parent is in jail or his mom or her mom is in jail, they still want to know why, they still want to have that closure of
yes.
understanding?
Yes.
See, that brings to mind the Guardium Ad Litem, where they, or actually an organization that I had here on the radio just last week, talking about the best interest, what's best, you know, the best interest for a child. And a lot of the times the courts might say, well, you know, I don't deem this possible. But when we're going down to emotions, because emotions is basically what drives us to do whatever we do, you know, it seems that, yes, and it does make sense for a child to have that opportunity to say, I'm lost, or I'm, you know, who am I here without you? Why did you leave me? Why aren't you coming back to me?
Yeah, and people always say, you know, they think what a child think, but you don't know what a child is thinking. And a lot of time, like I say, they act out. I know my oldest grandson used to think, you know, if I get in trouble, I go to jail, I'll be with my dad. And I had to tell him, no, you won't. You won't be with your dad. You just be in jail. And this the feeling he was having, and thank God he, you know, said it to me.
Yeah.
And that's why I say a lot of them need to face off with their parents, and their parents need to listen to them, and let them talk to them how they feel. Let them know just how they feel, how they are hurting inside, and then they respond to them. You know, because like I said, children being angry caused them to do a lot of things. And like I said, because of what happened to my grandson, and this young man had been angry with his family, his mama, for a long time, and the anger happened to come out on the baby, and it shouldn't have been. And that was one of the reasons I started the organization, because of me, you know, dealing, going into prisons and seeing things and talking to the guys and talking to their families and kids. And I said, hey, you know, I want to go. And then after I, you know, buried my grandson, you know, a couple of babies got murdered after that. And when I buried him, it was like 3 babies over there. Now it's like 16 babies over there.
In less than 2 years?
Yeah.
And that's all in the area, in the Riviera Beach area, or which area?
This in Delray.
Wow.
This is in Delray. And like I said, I was talking to the Big Brothers Big Sister organization, and they was telling me that, you know, they have mentors for the girls, but they don't have the girls. And I told them, you know, what the good of having an organization if you don't have nobody to come out and talk to the community? You know, like we was trying to do hand-on-hand, you know, run off, give pamphlets, talk to people hand-on-hand, like go in the community and talk to people. Say, okay, we here. This is what we could do. We could hook you up to this person, and this is what they could do, and make sure that they follow up on what we do, because I always believe in, if you can't do it, just say you can't do it. Don't tell a kid a lie. That's the worst thing to do to a kid, tell them a lie. It's better to say, no, we can't do it, or no, I can't do it, than to tell them a lie, because that's one thing, you know, I do with my grandkids. If I can't do it, I just tell them I can't do it. I do not promise them nothing that I can't do.
You know what? That's something that you just brought to mind. I have an 8-year-old son, and my mother has been an extremely important part of my life. And even though the relationship between her and I was sometimes turbulent, because my generation, you know, I'm 41 years old, and my generation, we came right at, you know, toward the end of when the feminist movement and the new millennium and the technology age with the computer. So all of a sudden, you know, we in my generation, I can speak, you know, for myself as a woman, knowing a lot of other women, realizing how we tended to not want to listen to our mothers. And yet mm-hmm. the grandmothers who are now raising so many of these children stand with such a focus of what is right for these children, which really is, don't promise something that you can't deliver. Don't tell them you're going to come back and not come back. Don't be late, because they depend. But to us, most of the times we're so busy doing so many things that we don't realize how we're affecting our children. And, you know, I'll tell you, I was just at a detention center a few weeks ago, and these girls, on Thanksgiving Day, there were 76 youth at that detention center, and only 6 parents came to see them.
Uh-huh.
You know, and uh-huh. what you're saying is so right. So let's talk. We only have 4 minutes, but okay. What can we do to go forward? What do you want to see? What will help you get your outreach out there?
Okay, I what will help me is, you know, basically funding and you know, getting the paperwork and going out talking to the community and making sure that they know, okay, this is a place we could go, and this place could get me to, like, your organization or any organization that could help solve work with the problem that family is having. Because if the girls is having a problem with the mother, then we need to find some organization or somebody to talk to the mother and counsel the girls, and then bring them together and find out what the problem is. Because until we do that, the world going to constantly go downhill. We're going to constantly get murders, and we're going to constantly get children, killing children, and it's just never going to change.
Now, are you familiar with MAMA, the Mothers Against Murderers Association?
Yes, yes.
Okay, because that's right up here on 45th Street in West Palm Beach.
Yeah.
That's an organization, because that's what I'm basically seeing. You know, I'm basically seeing really being able to come together with different organizations and being able to present ourselves as one entity. For example, your outreach is to take these youth to the prison to meet with their parents, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Whether it be their father and their mother. And through the process, also go out into the community and do prevention by speaking to, basically bringing awareness to the issues, whether it's speaking to the parents or speaking to the youth themselves.
Yes, and having classes and having people to come out. You know, like I said, I have volunteer teachers and nurses and whatever that would volunteer their time to teach this. And I want to say one thing with the Mothers Against Murderers. The only problem I had with them, because I forgave this guy, I didn't go for him getting a death penalty. I actually went in the courts and fought for him. And I just had a lot of problem with people because of that.
Mm-hmm. And even at the Mothers Against Murderers Association?
Well, I didn't directly talk to them, but one of my counselors, which is Lisa, where I go to a victim services, she was telling me about the program, and it basically didn't, you know, deal with people that really forgave them for fault for the murderer, which was the opposite of what they are doing is what I did, and it's because of my religion that I did what I supposed to did, you know.
Yeah. See, I will say that it's, you know, where I stand for is we can all focus on the issues or we can focus on solutions, and in order for us to be able to equip our youth and become the role models, we need to stand at a place of standing for good, you know, standing for justice, standing for God, because God is about love.
Right.
And, you know, when you said that to me, immediately I say, it's who are we to judge somebody else? We can't. You know, we can't. In our human condition, our human frailty, we can. But we can do whatever we need to do in order to move forward, in order to bring light, in order to bring spirit and hope. And I feel that is what you're doing. So I will just tell you that God has placed you and I on the same path, and I see what you're doing, and I will tell you I am committed to really making a difference, and a difference that will come by being able to help at all levels. And you have it, so I thank you very much for coming on Power to Be You and Rights to Win for Our Youth. And know that March 21st, I will be having the one-day personal development, faith-based coaching in West Palm Beach, and you are going to be a part of it. So I look forward to seeing your organization there and having you once again on the show.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne.
Uh-huh.
Like, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Sandra Bueno with Power to Be You and Rise to Win. And as you can see, this is real. This is about stepping up and making a difference. People are doing it, and it's all about having the will, the desire, and God's purpose behind us guiding our way. So stay tuned to Rise to Win for Our Youth. Go to risetowin.com. Join the movement, because we are here to stay and to make a difference. I will be with you again next Monday. Thank you.